Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you today?
That's how I'm doing. Spooky as all get up.
Okay.
Did you not like the spooky laugh?
I don't know. Not really.
It was well practiced. I do this alone in the dark.
I like it. So, yeah, we want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. And you can subscribe to our podcast completely free on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. That'll help make sure you never miss an episode. And that is the best way to help support the show. You can also support the show by checking out Five Finger Tees. They have a bunch of amazing t-shirts over there. Reasonably priced too, but $10 for most shirts, $30 for hoodies. Use promo code 5OFF at checkout. Save a little bit of money at the checkout counter. But it's not $5 off as we talked about last week. It's only 5%.
Oh, cheese is still cheese.
That's true. Cheese is cheese. So, hey, JD, before we jump into Dracula's Daughter and get into the episode, let's get back to last week. We did Halloween 2. What was your feedback on our Halloween 2 episode?
Especially with the new movie coming out and being right on the cusp of that. Nothing but love from all of you guys. So happy that you tuned in and listened to hear what we had to say. We were obviously joined by a special guest, as always, who rocked the house. Kyle, plug him.
Shout out to Dave at Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. He's also part of Black Cat Shadow, who we're going to have on the podcast really soon. I've got Andy coming on to... Man, should we tease our November schedule already? I don't know if we should do that. Let's wait.
Let's wait till the end of October to tease.
Okay. Okay, it's coming up quick, but we'll just say on the first episode, Andy's going to be there, and it's going to be a really fun episode. I'm excited to share it. But yeah, I thought episode 62 was amazing, Halloween 2. It was fun to dive back into a movie that I honestly just haven't watched in a long time. And it was better than I expected. Unlike the week before with Saw 2, which was worse than I expected. So I guess you never know how these things are going to play out.
But that's what's so fun about our podcast is we're revisiting the movies just the same as you're revisiting the movies. So
absolutely. Well, JD, let's shoot the breeze a little bit, man. What was your week like? And we haven't talked much. You sent me a couple of text messages. I think our audience would be interested to hear who you met.
Yeah, so that's a great little tie-in. I went to an award show for musical theater on Monday night. And as I'm walking out of the theater, I happen to see no other than Michael Shannon. And he's dead serious, one of my favorite actors. He's on my list of if I can have lunch with, you know, whoever, Michael Shannon would be on there. And he was looking scraggly as hell.
Okay.
And I point at him and I go, Michael Shannon. Like I'm straight out of Seinfeld. Michael Shannon. And he looks at me and he goes, ugh. And so I shook his hand and we parted ways. And the whole coincidence didn't really catch up with me. And then a few hours later, there was an after party.
Yeah.
And I see him. He's waiting in line at the make your own mac and cheese station.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I come up to him again. He obviously doesn't remember me from the awkward encounter earlier. And I was like, Michael Shannon, I need to grab a picture. And he was like, and we grabbed a picture and it was totally awesome. I loved it.
Did you have any real conversation with him, or was it all just him, like, garbling?
He was just garbling, man. He just kept it super low-key. And, you know, from the... I talked to a few other people that apparently he's... Not apparently, he's very big in the theater community, and he's okay. Especially in the Chicago theater community. He's a prominent player. So, you know, in talking to some people that were like, yeah, I know Michael Shannon, worked with Michael Shannon. Apparently, he's just such a thoughtful person that it just takes him a while to respond in social situations. And it's not that he's awkward or anything like that. It's just he's a very genuine person, I'm told. And my interaction with him speaks volumes to that. And it was fantastic. I was blown away. That was almost, I wasn't totally starstruck, but I was almost starstruck.
You know what kind of took me off, a little bit off guard, is I didn't realize how big he was.
He's a tall man.
Big dude. Hit me. Big old forehead, I guess. In Hollywood, it's true, man. Big, big head, big screen.
Absolutely. And he's... No, I mean, he could have told me to fuck off left and right, but, you know, him and his scraggly beard, and I'm not going to say big forehead. I'll say fantastic forehead.
Yeah.
We're very accommodating.
Okay. Yeah, you never know if we could possibly get him on the podcast one day. We don't want to shoot ourselves in the foot here, but... Yeah, I feel like if he would have told you the F off, you just would have been like, yeah, that's totally cool. Anyway, can I grab a picture, though?
Right.
So, okay. That's interesting. I knew you were busy because we had to wait a couple of days to record. We've both been super busy with work and stuff like that. So that's cool. Did you partake in the mac and cheese, or were you just stalking Shannon?
No, so interestingly enough, I did partake in the mac and cheese. I did my mac and cheese. We had the shells. We had the cheddar. I did Parmesan, broccoli, onion, and chicken in mine, and it was delicious.
Well done, sir.
I don't know what his mac and cheese order was, though, so please do not put words in my mouth.
Okay. Well, that would be the first thing we'd put in your mouth.
Ha!
Zing! Had to. Low-hanging fruit.
I guess
my weekend was kind of boring. I don't know. I don't have any good stories. I didn't meet any celebs. I didn't get any mac and cheese. In fact, I've been on a diet, so I've been eating nothing but grilled chicken and broccoli. And the thought of broccoli going down my throat right now makes me want to puke. I've also been drinking a lot of water. Got to piss a lot.
See, I'm very invested in the water drinking.
Yeah, I like a little lemon with my water, though, and I haven't had any lemon at the house. I got to go buy one.
Interesting.
That makes it a little bit better. Are you a lemon guy?
I do like lemons. When it comes to my drink, whether it be water or something more exciting, I would go for a lime over a lemon.
Yeah, one of my first bands that I put together in high school, we actually had a song that my lead guitarist vocalist would sing, and it was called Squeeze My Lemon, and it was a comedy song. And I wish I could remember the chorus, but the ending of it is him yelling, right in my fucking eye, as he's playing his guitar. It was a hilarious song. I got to get it recorded someday. Next time I'm with him, I'll be like, dude, give me the lemon song. Let me hit record. This baby's going viral.
I'm so glad that you're still holding on to those high school dreams.
Well, that really hurts. You know what? Son of a bitch.
Yeah, I know how to get you.
You sure do, because I really wish I was a rock star. I swear we can make it. Come on, one more chance. No, I couldn't. I'd last a week on the road before I... Well, Autry's been arrested for throwing stuff out of a window. He thinks it's 1980. You can't do that anymore.
Is that what would do you in? The wildlife
would
do
be.
You in?
Yep, I'd go flying right off the rails. Just... lines of coke left and right. It would be nasty.
Interesting. I would just always miss gigs because I'd just be sleeping. I love napping way too much. So if I had like no schedule to push, it'd be like, oh, we don't have to do anything till 7 p.m. tonight. Like,
right.
Shit, I'm just going to sleep all day. And then all of a sudden it would be tomorrow and I'd be like, fuck, I missed it.
Pull
How did
like
it go?
An Axl Rose and just show up like three hours late to your concert.
Everybody's just screaming in it. They're all excited, so it's all good.
He's like, welcome to the jungle. All right,
I just showed up here.
All right, cool. Well, hey, man, let's jump into the reason we're here. Let's do a little intro to Dracula's Daughter. This is a 1936 American vampire horror film produced by Universal Pictures. It's a sequel to the 1931 film Dracula, which we covered in our archives. It's directed by Lambert Hillyer from a screenplay by Garrett Fort. The film stars Otto Kruger, Gloria Holden in the title role, and Margaret Churchill features as the only cast member to return from the original, Edward Van Sloan. Although his character's name is different, it's no longer Van Helsing, it's Von Helsing. Not sure why they did that. JD, you have any idea?
You know what? For what it's worth, my name on my birth certificate is not my actual name, so I can relate to not actually existing the same way as Van versus Von Helsing.
Hold the phone. What?
Yeah, technically I don't exist. My birth certificate says a completely different name.
What's your name?
Not different name. I if I tell you, then it sort of kills the mystery of it, doesn't it?
No, you're not getting off the hook. I want the freaking name.
It's not a different name. It's just my last name is spelled incorrect.
Okay.
So there's an A at the end instead of an O.
Deasandra?
Wow, you can't even say my name.
Deasandra?
Yeah, I'm I don't exist. So if I ever get arrested, I've got an out. So if I ever go to court or anything like that, yeah. It's like, guys, I don't exist.
I'm not Justin DeSandro. That sounds ludicrous. Look at my birth certificate.
Different person. No big deal.
Okay. I thought you were going to say like your first name was like something crazy, like Edward. I'm like, come on. No way. That would have really threw me for a loop. That would have been the best episode we ever did.
So I should have lied to you. I can lie to you. I have no problem lying to you. I lie to you all the time.
It happens all the time, no doubt. Okay. Well, let's keep trucking along here. So Dracula's Daughter tells the story of Countess Mara Zaleski, the daughter of Count Dracula, and herself a vampire. Following Dracula's death, she believes that by destroying his body, she will be free of his influence and live normally. Obviously, we'll talk more about this in the full review. While this was successful upon its original release, the film was generally well-received and well-reviewed, but it did not do quite as well as the original, which is almost always the case, even in the 1930s. Critics gave made notes about the film's strong lesbian overtones, which Universal acknowledged from the start of production and exploited in a lot of their advertising. JD, did you pick up on that during the watch?
Oh, yes. There's a lot going on in this movie in terms of undertones or overtones, and the similarities that you can make to this film and the original Dracula in terms of seductiveness. I know we're going to touch on a lot of it, and then even some earlier literature, which really digs into vampirism, and there are a lot of lesbian under/overtones. Where it comes from. I mean, I can make a really horrid joke right now, but I'm not going to.
Is there any part that like really caught you off guard? Because normally we do like a really deep dive on the episodes, but we're going to do more of like a brisk jaunt around this movie. I'm not going to dive in like second by second into this movie. So is there anything that like caught you off guard where you're like, wow, that's a little much?
Well, much in the same way that Dracula is so seductive to everyone that he goes at, and it's so like overtly, you know, dominant male versus submissive female, to see those roles reversed and to have the Countess be such a strong figure is pivotal to that level of sexuality between male and female role normalities.
So let's talk about the lead real quick. Dracula's Daughter was Gloria Holden's first starring role, and reportedly she was extremely displeased with having been assigned to the movie. Like many actors, she kind of looked down on horror films, and that she had also watched Bela Lugosi struggle over the years since Dracula to not be typecasted. So, JD, do you have any thoughts on that? And just you know, in general, like actors or actresses not wanting to be typecast into certain roles.
It's such an interesting phenomenon, the idea of being typecast, isn't it? Like that you would do something so well that you would be pigeonholed in doing that same thing over and over and over again. And I, you know, my acting resume, as your acting resume, is very short. Pizza Parlor Massacre and Slurpees.
Don't forget Crawl Space. Everybody always leaves that out.
Oh, I was the star of Crawl Space. Crawl Space was actually a good, good film.
Remember my cameo at the end as the realtor?
I don't, but I'm glad that you brought that up. I don't. My cameo is the guy that had to crawl into the crawl space because nobody else would do it. You pansies. I'll be the one that crawls into this freaking mud room. Spiders everywhere.
That's awesome.
My point being that it's like, if you look at the trajectory of like a lot of stars' careers, especially like when you look at Michael Keaton had the same complaints and after he left Batman to be like, well, okay, well, I don't want to be typecast into this kind of sphere. And then look what he ended up doing with that by just breaking the mold with Birdman and then breaking the mold again as being Vulture and Spider-Man. It's just, yes, being typecast does suck, but you can sort of tongue-in-cheek make a living off of it.
Oh, absolutely. So initially there were other plans for the sequel, and actually had Lugosi and Jane Wyatt set to star in a sequel, but Universal announced that Boris Karloff and Colin Clive, who had starred together in Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, would appear, and that Cesar Romero would play Dr. Garth. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Universal had sought Herbert Marshall for the role of Sandor before casting Pichelle, who would go on to play the role in this movie. None of them appeared except after a fashion Lugosi in the form of a wax bust molded in his image for use in Dracula's coffin. That's really the only shot of him in this movie, and he was paid $4,000 for his involvement in that. Not bad, right?
I would take $4,000 for a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. After the movie wrapped, I don't know if you had read into any of this stuff here, but Universal actually lost control of the property. They apparently had gotten into some financial stress, and they had to take out a loan, and they were like $50,000 over budget on this movie, which ended up costing roughly about $280,000 to make the picture.
Make the picture.
So this is actually the last in the first cycle of like Universal horror films that goes all the way back to like the 1920s. So they wouldn't actually come up with another movie in that franchise until 1939 when they put out Son of Frankenstein. I thought that was kind of interesting. I had no idea that Universal had lost control of the rights at any point.
No, I didn't know that either.
Interesting stuff, right? Well, you know what else is interesting? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back on the other end with the full review, and you guys are going to hear from the next movie that's going to be part of this Universal crossover, and you're going to hear from the Fright Night podcast, and they'll be plugging their show coming up. We'll be back on the other side.
What are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel.
Hi, I'm Hope Madden.
And I'm George Wolf.
And we are Mad Wolf of the Fright Club podcast.
And we are thrilled to join the Back in Time podcast and the rest of the gang with a look at one of the Universal Monster sequels.
Join us next week for a really close look at one of our favorites, The Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. Ready to jump into the full review. So we begin here, the Carfax Abbey with Professor Van Helsing, not Van Helsing, and he drives a wooden stake into the heart of the vampire lord known as Dracula, and he is promptly arrested for the crime and brought to the Scotland Yard, where he's interrogated by the commissioner, Basil Humphrey. Humphrey accuses him of committing murder, but Van Helsing defends his position, citing that Dracula was a vampire, and as such, a creature of the undead. Humphrey tells him that there's only two ways that this will end for him: at the gallows or in an asylum. He then asks if he has considered legal representation. Van Helsing intends on contacting one of his old students, a psychiatrist named Dr. Jeffrey Garth. JD, what do you think of this opening segment here with Van Helsing and kind of picking up where we left off in the first movie?
Dude, I love that they get right into litigation with it. Like, the legal ramifications of murdering somebody that you claim is a vampire, that's its whole own, like, that's, isn't that like a whole own subgenre of a movie of just like, what does the courtroom scene look like after a crazy man claims, no, it's totally cool, he's a vampire, I murdered him, it's not a problem. And what do they say? Like, oh, well, because he's over however many hundreds of years, it's not technically murder, so.
Yeah. Next, we meet Dracula's daughter, Countess Mara Zaleski, next. She's played by Gloria Holden. JD, thoughts on Gloria Holden here as Dracula's daughter? What do you think of her?
She's very mesmerizing, isn't she?
Yeah, I thought that too, and that was before you even really see her face. Like, just her eyes, I was like, okay, a little Angelica Houston going on here.
Ooh, good comparison. I like that.
Dun-dun-dun-dun. In our archives, by the way.
In
good episodes. We got to do episode 2 coming up. That'd be Adam's Family Values. I always like that one around Thanksgiving time.
Because it's a legit Thanksgiving movie, too.
I think we shouldn't tease it. We'll say no more. Say no more. Leave them waiting. So we meet the daughter, and then next we see the aide and basically her manservant here, Sandor. And the Countess goes and steals Dracula's body from the Scotland Yard and ritualistically burns it, hoping to break her curse of vampirism. Vampirism? Is that a word?
Vampirism.
Vampirism?
Vampirism.
Vampiro, the WCW wrestler?
Ooh, well done.
I always liked him. Yeah, I'm not going to get that word. It's just not in my vocabulary, but I thought this scene was interesting, JD. First, she uses a ring to like put the guards in a trance, and then she steals Dracula from the yard. What would you think of this scene?
Yeah, it's definitely a kind of a cool scene, and it takes like the whole mythology of what a vampire movie is and what Dracula, who Dracula is, and like just inverts it into like almost like a thriller or like a crime movie of her stealing the body. It's just, it makes sense, but at the same time, it's unexpected.
Right. So in the next shot, we actually see her full face for the first time. She sits down and just starts nailing away at the piano. I always like this period of filmmaking. I feel like the actors and actresses were just, they're either more musically talented or they're just better trained. I mean, I always think of movies like Wizard of Oz and like Judy Garland, her amazing voice, but like, a lot of those movies, they could break out into a show tune, and you're just like, wow, they're amazing. She doesn't actually sing here, but for some reason, it sparked that memory. Any thoughts on that?
No, that's a good point. And I was recently thinking the same, especially like on the brink of having my whole Michael Shannon run-in experience. But,
yeah,
you know, the way that entertainment has evolved from even when, you know, live theater and everything Shakespeare was doing, you know, we're talking actors that are on the stage and living and breathing everything they were doing every single day, and what film changed and evolved that to be, that you're looking at a lot of these actors that had multi-talented skills because that's just what they had to do. You couldn't just bank on being a pretty face. You had to be able to sing and dance. And that's why so many films from this period had all of that, especially when you look at like a lot of the Christmas movies.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point too. Even think about the Christmas movies. So Sandor soon realizes that her thirst for blood has not quenched and that it's really just in her eyes. And he even says, it's in your eyes, death. I like the writing here. I mean, of course, it's a little cheesy because the movie's 82 years old, but I mean, just like when he just says death, I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. What do you think?
Yeah, it hits it right on and perfectly. Death.
So we see the Countess resumes her hunting. She's mesmerizing her victims with her jeweled ring. After a meeting with Dr. Garth at a party, the Countess asks him to help her overcome what she feels and what's coming from beyond the grave. The doctor advises her to defeat her cravings by confronting them. And then she puts like some hope in her, which is good. Dr. Garth's science and her will, that could be strong enough to overcome this Dracula malevolence, however you want to say it. JD, what do you think of this scene here with Dr. Garth and the Countess here for the first time?
It puts a real great emphasis on giving a level of humanity to her, doesn't it?
It does, and I don't know what you think. I mean, but do you think the doctor can stop her urge for blood? I don't know. I don't think he can.
I mean, in a practical sense, no. Like, how could a simple doctor have that kind of authority over the physics of the supernatural?
Right. Next, the Countess sends Sandor to fetch her a model to paint. He returns with Lily, played by Nan Gray. Countess Zaleski initially resists her urges, but succumbs and attacks Lily. Actually does survive the attack, but when the doctor tries to hypnotize her to learn what happened, she suffers heart failure and dies. And the only way you possibly can in the 30s where you are talking 1 second and the next minute you just faint and then look into the abyss.
I have succumbed to death.
What do you think of this scene?
It reminded me of a long forgotten, probably my first ever movie that I tried to do and tried to write. It was called The Monster That Ate Everybody.
Okay.
This was my freshman year of college. So even when you were a tot in high school, still. And we came up with this amazingly famous line that we quoted throughout college, cause of death, dying. just like, we need you to die now, so boom, you're dead. Get out of here.
Okay. So basically Saw 2.
The original Saw 2.
Yeah. Yeah, like they would just kill characters off randomly. Like, yep, he's got to go.
It's time now. They all have poison in their systems, but it's affecting you differently. Like, now you die.
Right. What did you think about the death of Lily? I guess this kind of caught me a little bit off guard. I thought she might control her urges a little bit longer. But, I mean, this was kind of quick. What would you think of that?
No, I think it creates a great juxtaposition between the humanity and then the incivility that a vampire would have to go through. Like, you can't think of it like any type of addiction that anybody would have where you just want to dive in or can't dive in and then you just do. I think that this definitely tells like a mirrored message about that. And if this movie came out in 2018, like the same way, almost like It Follows was a metaphor for sexuality, I think that there would be more of a verbose claim to fame that this scene would represent.
The Countess comes to next, and we see that she's kind of accepting that a cure is just not possible, and the doctor discovers the truth about her condition. She lures him to Transylvania by kidnapping Janet, the woman that he loves, and she intends to transform him into a vampire to be her eternal companion. Dr. Garth agrees to exchange his life for Janet's. JD, what do you think of the kidnapping here and the alternative that she gives Dr. Garth?
It makes sense from a writing standpoint, and any time that you write anything, that sometimes it becomes apparent that you sort of create a game of chess for yourself of what is character A doing, what is character B doing, and then what they would do in response. And I think that we have a classic situation of where we are and where we're going, and I think that this is written to match her actions versus her reactions.
So we get to the ending of the movie. Again, this goes quick. Before he can be transformed, Countess Zaleski is destroyed by Sandor, who shoots her through the heart with an arrow as revenge for her breaking her promise to make him immortal.
That was heartbreaking to see.
Yeah, it definitely caught me off guard when that happened. I was like, why the heck's he shooting her? What the heck was that for? Obviously, I mean, in hindsight, it makes sense, but and then he takes aim at Dr. Garth and he's shot dead by the policeman, and that's pretty much the end of the film. He kind of goes out in a ball of fire here. What did you think of the ending?
It's a blaze of glory, and to see Sandor and whatever.
Sandusky.
to see Sandusky, you know, grow a pair and be like, well, if I'm not going to live forever, I'm going to kill you,
right,
bitch. I thought that was a bold statement, and it was kind of a cool little exclamation point on this story. And this story is very, it's a short one. What, we're 71 minutes long?
It's a very short movie. And then when I went through, I kind of cut out, you know, a lot of the fluff of just like some stuff that wasn't really moving the story along. So I wanted to keep this episode a little bit shorter and just focus on the main talking points here. But I mean, the movie's 82 years old. It's an interesting chapter in the Dracula storyline here. The canon, as the cool kids say these days. What do you think of the film overall?
I thought it was a really cool and unique and brave way of approaching what is the cinematic sequel to Dracula. Okay. By not having Dracula be the main big bad, right? But at the same time, we're seeing the effect of all that he did and all that he accomplished. And you made the reference to Sawtooth earlier, and it's I can't make any case for Sawtooth not following essentially that plot format that was defined in 1936. This was, yeah, 82 years ago. We're looking at a movie that says, hey, we're looking at, you know, pre-World War II, mash, hey, let's take the trolley, see? you know, obviously probably white men sitting down and saying, where do we take the Dracula franchise? And, you know, as writers and producers and directors, we're still falling into the same tropes and having the same issues and problems coming up with sequels nowadays. It's just, it's kind of inspiring and mind-boggling at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was fun. I'm glad we got to come back and do the sequel. This was fun to get to do the first two that honestly I just had really never watched before we did the podcast. So this was fun.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be a part of this. Like, Universal Monsters are massive. Obviously, both of us are huge Monster Squad fans and love everything that they did with that film. And one day maybe we'll get a remake or a sequel.
Who knows? Who knows what they'll do? They Hollywood loves sequels. That's for sure. Reboots, everything. But big shout out to Dave over at Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. He put this together. He put together the last time we did this as well. He's kind of spearheaded this entire thing. Got a lot of different podcasts involved. So check out all the different podcasts that have been taking part of this. Subscribe to their shows. Check out their episodes. Again, next week is going to be with Fright Club, so go over there, check out that show. I've listened to several of their episodes. I think they have a great show. I believe it's husband and wife that do it together. It's a cool dynamic that they have, so definitely check those guys out. And then next week, we're going to be back, and JD, who are you going to call? We're covering the 1984 action comedy fantasy film Ghostbusters. I don't know if I've ever been this excited for an episode that we're about to do, because this movie, like, was my childhood growing up. It's probably my first memory is running around with the old, I think they're Kenner proton packs, the ones that were blue.
Oh boy.
Had like the yellow Nerf thing that would come out the front.
Yeah, I obviously had one of those. It had the little trap that you would push on the air pressure pedal and it would pop open.
Yeah, I had a really cool Ghostbusters tent too that unfortunately must have gotten damaged, because I asked my mom if she still had it, and she's like, oh no, that was gone a long time ago. I really wish I still had the tent. I looked on eBay, no tents up there with the one that I had, so that's a bummer.
Do you remember calling the phone number from the movie?
I don't.
We'll get into that when we get into the full review of that. But they did a phone number, and it was like, ooh, if you got a ghost, go ahead and call. And they rattled out a phone number, and I remember distinctly like typing that in like onto the phone, being like thinking that I would get a hold of the Ghostbusters. But and it totally messed me up, because my older brother had a Ghostbusters birthday party at one point And so I legit thought the Ghostbusters were real because they were at my grandpa's house for my older brother's birthday party. I was like, there's Peter Venkman. That's him.
That's awesome.
For him. Now, it wasn't my birthday. It was his.
Okay. Thank you guys for listening. Subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, CastBox, YouTube. We are up there. You can subscribe for free. Follow us on social media. We're at Back in Time Pod. You can email us backintimepodcast@gmail.com. It is that time of the episode to climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
I want to suck your blood.
Or dick. That's where I met Vampire Mary.